exactly what happened yesterday when the Prime Minister said, yes, I did know that they were still friends when I appointed him. Yeah. I think that moment for lots of people, beginning of the end.
Yeah, and just forced to admit it rather than coming forward with it initially.
Third
as
time
well.
Of asking.
Yeah.
And we've got Steve Reed, who's a big Morgan McSweeney ally and an ally of Keir Starmer. We've got Kemi Badenoch at 9 o'clock as well, who'll be wanting to. She had a good couple of weeks, so her tail will be up. So it's a big old day.
Okay, stick with us here on Times Radio.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Good morning. It's 6 o'clock. This is Stig Abel and Kate McCann with Times Radio Breakfast.
Headlines this morning: Keir Starmer and his chief of staff are facing growing anger from Labour MPs over the Mandelson scandal. And Volodymyr Zelensky reveals that 55,000 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed in the war with Russia.
Ahead, we'll hear from some of Labour's backbenchers and we'll hear their concerns. And Rosie Wright will come back to tell us more about the Sunday Times Sportswoman of the Year Award.
She's the hardest working woman in show business. It's Thursday, the 5th of February.
This is Times Radio.
First, though, let's get the news with James Kitchen.
Thank you, Kate. Good morning. Sir Keir Starmer's facing growing anger from MPs after admitting he appointed Peter Mandelson as Britain's ambassador to Washington despite knowing about his links to Jeffrey Epstein. The Commons last night approved the release of documents relating to Lord Mandelson's appointment. The relevant paperwork will be referred to Parliament's Intelligence and Security Committee. The cross-party ISC will decide which files, if any, should be redacted on the grounds of national security and international relations. Speaking to Times Radio, the Labour MP Clive Effort also questioned the role of the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff, Morgan McSweeney.
The conflict that we're creating is deflecting from the messages that we need to get across about what this government is achieving. Because what this government has achieved in the last year and a bit is quite substantial, and we need to start focusing on getting across just exactly what we're achieving. No one knows, because we're just looking incompetent because we keep blundering into these internal rows.
The Metropolitan Police says it wants the committee to withhold some information in case it hampers the investigation into possible misconduct by Lord Mandelson while in public office. Meanwhile, Sir Keir Starmer will take a stand in defence of what he calls a decent and tolerant Britain built on common values. In a speech later, the Prime Minister will say his pride in the country runs deep within him. He's also expected to outline the government's £5 billion Pride in Place programme, which hopes to regenerate more than 330 of the most deprived communities. Volodymyr Zelensky says an estimated 55,000 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed in battle since Russia's full-scale invasion in 2022. In an interview broadcast on French television last night, the Ukrainian president said the number did not include those who are considered officially missing. Trilateral talks featuring delegates from Ukraine, the US and Russia will resume in Abu Dhabi later. William Courtney is a former presidential special assistant on Russia and Ukraine.
There's no sign, based on Russia's military continuing to pound civilian targets. So on the main issues, there's no reason for progress. Russia's rigidity suggests that it believes that it can still persist in the fight.
Testing period blood for signs of cervical cancer could be an accurate way of screening for the disease. The current NHS test involves a sample of cells being taken from the cervix, but a third of women invited for screening do not attend. The new test involves collecting blood on a cotton strip attached to a sanitary pad. The NHS is already sending at-home testing kits to women in some areas of England. England's Rugby Union World Cup winners stole the show at last night's Sunday Times' Sportswomen of the Year Awards. The main individual award went to Ellie Kildon, who scored the opening try in the final against Canada. The Red Roses also won the Team of the Year Award. Speaking to Times Radio, Holly Aitchison said she hopes she and her teammates will inspire the next generation.
As a team, we kind of just think about what the opportunities are for young girls growing up. So it's not about, you know, definitely coming into rugby, football. It's just about having the opportunity to be who you want to be. So, you know, if we kind of show ourselves as role models in that way, then we can only hope that the girls coming through will have the same opportunities.
For a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, online, and on your smart speaker. Times Radio Breakfast with Nationwide.
Good morning. This is Stig Abel and Kate McCann with Times Radio Breakfast. It's 4 minutes past six. Grave peril, screams the front page of one newspaper this morning. Starmer fights for future, is the front of the Times. The Prime Minister is used to pressure from his opponents, some too from his own MPs, but nothing like this. The seeds of this political scandal were sown years ago, at the end of 2024, when Keir Starmer was handed a two-page document stating clearly that Peter Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein had continued after the paedophile's conviction. The short memo, containing mainly information available online, was the only vetting done before the Prime Minister announced his delight at Mandelson's appointment to the role of US ambassador. The Prime Minister knew of that continuing relationship and deemed the appointment worth the risk. That calculation looks very different this morning. Furious Labour backbenchers, led by Angela Rayner, dealt the government a blow last night and took control of the release of documents surrounding that appointment out of the Prime Minister's hands. But significant questions remain, including the vetting of other key Downing Street staff. The Prime Minister will give a speech today. Will he survive the fury of his party? And will the powerful men at the heart of this scandal finally be held to account?
Yes, so on the programme this morning, we'll take you right into the House of Commons where the extraordinary scenes played out last night. We'll hear from Labour MPs who wonder if the Prime Minister's time is finally up. And from Cabinet Minister Steve Reid, a close political ally of Morgan McSweeney, a man also in the firing line for his judgment over the Mandelson appointment. There are calls from some unnamed government ministers this morning for McSweeney to be removed as Chief of Staff, a sacrificial lamb to stem the criticism about the way the story mess has been handled. But there's also a sense that even that a sacking of this scale would not be enough at this point. Later, Kemi Badenoch will join us. She's led the charge yesterday, pushing the Prime Minister to admit what he knew or he knew. And we kind of knew he knew, but he never said he knew. And that's the point that Kate was making about the sharp intake of breath. It was very strongly suspected he knew about Mandelson, but he had to say, on the third time of asking, yes, I knew. And that's the moment which some people think is the time where the door slammed shut on him. We'll also try and understand how the ripples of the scandal are reaching into the royal family as staff, this is brilliant, are refusing to serve Andrew at his new home in Norfolk.
And we can't read out the headline, but if you do have a copy of The Sun handy this morning, you might want to take a look. We can't.
So the story is in, he's going to Norfolk.
Yes.
Work for Andrew.
Careful.
Norfolk, in chance, is how The Sun has done it. Did I get through that? Is that survivable?
There was a sort of sharp intake of breath. Okay. You can WhatsApp us this morning. We have got Heidi Alexander, the Transport Secretary, on the programme. She'll be taking your questions live for half an hour from 9:30. What would you like her to answer? You can get in touch and let us know.
And that's actually... So we've got Steve Reid. We're talking to him about the government matter of Mandelson and McSweeney and Starmer. We're at 9:30, we're going to recognise, which I think we should do, that government still continues. And we can't spend all our time talking just about...
We're going to talk about trains and planes.
We're going to talk about anything in the area of transport that you want us to talk about. We're going to say to Heidi Alexander, we're not going to ask her about Mandelson. We'll have done that with Steve Reid. We do that all the time. We're going to say, what are the transport issues that matter to you, the listener, in the country? So if you've got any questions about transport that you think, I really want we've had some great ones already, actually... Yeah. In any area that might touch upon the work of Heidi Alexander, please do send them in. 0333 00032353. You can text us on 87222, starting with the word Times, or email our producer Emma on studio@times.radio. And of course, you can share your thoughts on everything else that we're discussing, including this question: is this the end of Keir Starmer, and should it be?
It is 8 minutes past six. The Peter Mandelson scandal dominates the headlines for another day. The front page of the Times this morning, that headline in full, Starmer fights for future over Mandelson scandal. The paper points to the admission of the Prime Minister that he and his Chief of Staff, Morgan McSweeney, were warned about Mandelson's ongoing friendship with the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein.
And if you look at the newspapers this morning, we don't always read out the sort of all the newspapers, but it is a sort of a sense of where the story's got to. And the front pages are appalling. for the Prime Minister. The Financial Times has Epstein files, barrage over Mandelson painted as the beginning of the end of Starmer.
The Sun's headline is revolting. The paper ties together the story that staff are refusing to serve Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor at his new Norfolk home and Labour MPs forcing the Prime Minister into a U-turn over the Mandelson files.
The Telegraph's front page has Rayner turns on Starmer.
In The Guardian, it's over for Starmer, say Labour MPs amid fury over Mandelson.
Which is interesting because that The Guardian is the kind of the voice of the left wing of the party, and that's the line they're going for. And the Daily Mail's headline is Starmer in grave peril as the knife is twisted, I think it says. As Rayner twists knife, I think, is the headline. Yeah, I've got it here. That Starmer in grave peril as Rayner twists knife.
It was a difficult day in the House of Commons with a challenging Prime Minister's questions. This was the key moment.
I am asking the Prime Minister something very specific, not about the generalities of the full extent. Can the Prime Minister tell us, did the official security vetting he received mention Mandelson's ongoing relationship with the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein? So
clear. Prime Minister.
Yes, it did. As a result, various questions were put to him. I intend to disclose to this House all of the national security, prejudice to international relations on one side. I want to make sure this House sees the full documentation.
Yes, it did, says the Prime Minister. And you could hear the gasps there. You could hear first the sort of groans of the Conservative MPs, and just underneath that, I think, the gasps of those on the Labour benches at that admission.
Because the problem he's got is he says that he then asks further questions. But the difficult argument is going to be, but you were told he was friends with a convicted paedophile who'd been convicted and emerged from prison. So what further question did you need beyond that? Because are you saying there's an acceptable level of friendship? Well, you are saying there's an acceptable level of friendship.
By definition, if you are saying you knew that and then there were other questions. I mean, the Prime Minister is suggesting that he was lied to, as were his staff. But I think it's very difficult. That information was all in the public domain. If you head to thetimes.com today, you can read. It's a really, really detailed piece of writing about what the Prime Minister knew and when. Mm. And it is very clear that actually the Prime Minister was asked in public at a press conference around the same time about whether it was a safe appointment given that fact that the two men were still in touch. And the Prime Minister said basically nothing to see here, nothing for me to add.
Well, after that moment, there was a long debate about what information should now be released about the vetting of Peter Mandelson. Because you heard from Keir Starmer, there were various get-outs there. There's things about national security. International relations is a very broad term because international relations means, let's be absolutely frank about this, being close to Donald Trump. So is there anything in that exchange that could embarrass Donald Trump? If so, the government doesn't want to release it. But that's what's going to be tested now through this security committee that's going to look at it. Let's hear another moment from the chamber. This is where Alicia Kearns read out some messages taken from the Epstein files.
Liberation Day. My goodness. That is how Mandelson described the day of Epstein's release for prison for procuring children to be trafficked and raped. Disgusting. Mandelson's next message was, how is freedom feeling? Epstein replied, she feels fresh, firm, and creamy. Disgusting. Mandelson's next reply, naughty boy.
Disgusting. It was a real moment that yesterday. I was watching that live in the House of Commons when Alicia Kearns was reading out those messages, and it was a real moment, I think, for MPs to realise the depth of this friendship.
And Starmer couldn't have known that, because that's only come out in the Epstein files, but it reveals the friendship that he did know about, and that's the problem he's got in this area.
Paula Barker is the Labour MP for Liverpool Wavertree and is on the Commons Standards Committee. She gave us an insight into the current mood in the Parliamentary Labour Party.
There is a real sadness, disappointment, anger and hurt. Quite frankly, we have to do better. Our country deserves better and we must do better. And as I said, it will have to always be and it must be country before party. I hope that that's what we have demonstrated today from colleagues who have spoken on the Labour benches to say that this is not good enough. And I hope going forward that we can do far, far better for the country.
That was Paula Barker. Justin Madders was a business minister until just a few months ago. These are all Labour voices, by the way. These are people from Starmer's own party. He says it's important that the Intelligence and Security Committee oversees the release of the documents.
Now we have agreement that the Intelligence and Security Committee will oversee this. There is going to be independent oversight that will ensure that we get transparency on the matters pertaining to the appointment of Lord Mandelson. And we will no doubt see from these whether the Prime Minister's judgment in accepting what Lord Mandelson had told him at the time was, on the face of it, the correct call to make.
And Labour MP Matt Bishop highlighted the importance of following due process and not rushing to conclusions.
This inevitably raises questions about judgment and accountability at the top of government, but it's important to approach this with care. This shouldn't be treated simply as a political issue to be argued over in Westminster. There are potential victims at the centre of this, and their experiences matter far more than party politics. Among colleagues, the mood is thoughtful and measured. People understand the sensitivity of the situation and the need to avoid jumping to conclusions. There's a shared view that Parliament's responsibility is to allow the relevant processes to take place and to let the evidence be uncovered in full and to ensure everything is handled properly and transparently. Ultimately, though, this is about getting to the truth in the right way, respecting due processes, making sure public confidence is maintained by acting responsibly rather than rushing to any judgments.
Which I think to me sounds like the sort of, I'm not sure that's the line that I would want to hear from an MP, which sounds to me that process is important, but ultimately we need to get to the truth. We need to get to the truth promptly. It's like the police saying.
Well, they also said there are questions, serious questions of judgment.
Yeah, which undoubtedly there are. So let's find out that where have we got on the police, Kate? Because that's the other question. There's an intervention yesterday that began saying, hang on a second, you can't release stuff because it would prejudice an investigation, which is ridiculous because there are no rules or laws about prejudicing an investigation. There's prejudicing a trial which kicks in after arrest. I would say that it's the police's job to investigate and it's Parliament's job to enable us to know what happened.
It's a very interesting question. The Prime Minister used it in his responses to Kemi Badenoch yesterday. In fact, he made it part of his I'm being very transparent defence, where he said, I want the House to be very clear and I want to be honest with you. And there were lots of groans at that. And he said, you know, there are things that I... He basically said, there are things I wanted to release today, which I'm now not going to be able to because I'm having a conversation with the police about what they want me to do in terms of putting stuff in the public domain. And later, when that was debated in the Commons, and your point was made by a number of MPs, the Speaker of the Commons said, that is up to the Commons to decide. That is not a job for the police to decide. So I think there definitely is pushback on this idea that the police may have some say. Where it all ended up last night, and we'll hear more from Stephan Boscher in a few moments' time about the detail of this, is ultimately the Intelligence and Security Committee. Anything that the government doesn't release that's been requested will go to that committee and they will decide whether it should be released or not.
And we think that could take, what, weeks?
Well, the minister who was responding, very junior minister, it has to be said, who took all of this on his shoulders last night, not Keir Starmer or anybody more senior, said that in the past these kinds of humble addresses have taken, quote, weeks or months.
So the one question is, if we look at the chronology again, February there's going to be a by-election. Mm-hmm. That could go well or badly. There's May elections, obviously, which people think will go badly. When this hits in that chronology is interesting when it comes to plotting the survival of Keir Starmer.
The former deputy editor of the Sunday Times, Sarah Baxter, follows American politics very closely. She spoke to John Pienaar last night on Times Radio Drive and said, in her view, Mandelson was chosen as ambassador in 2024 because, and not despite, his connections.
This is exactly the sort of person that Donald Trump loves to do business with. And indeed, I think that Peter Mandelson was sent to America precisely because he had friends in that billionaire class. You know, he knew Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, that he was used to moving in the kind of circles with people that Trump likes and admires.
And a couple of people have raised it already that, you know, the Epstein link, was it seen as a thing that wasn't the worst thing in the world, bearing in mind where he was heading? That's not impossible. The fact of the matter is, they wanted Mandelson. Morgan McSweeney wanted Mandelson. There's a story in The Eye today that said Mandelson had been involved in vetting candidates for the election. Mm-hmm. He was at the centre of the bid to get Starmer elected as Prime Minister, and then they wanted him. And it felt, whatever else happened, it felt like, get Mandelson in at all costs. And everything else flowed from that.
I think there is also a question for me, and maybe this is something we'll put to Kemi Badenoch, who'll join us on the programme today, the Conservative Party leader at 9, about whether the women and this kind of scandal was just priced in. People in their heads in politics, the reason why when this appeared in a two-page document about Peter Mandelson is that in a really sad and very tragic way, people had already priced in, okay, Epstein, that happened, it was pretty bad, we've dealt with that, he's dead, we don't need to really worry about that anymore. And the truth of it and the reality of these Epstein files is that there are so many abuses, and the power of these men, it almost feels like that second order in a way. And I think that for a lot of people in the Commons yesterday, my feeling was that that is what's also driving them here. They feel a bit ashamed of the fact that not enough has been done.
And Hilary Rumbelow wrote this great piece about this in the Times yesterday. It's still available online and on the app. Well worth reading. She was on Hugo's show talking about it. But it's one of those articles that's gone viral, because her point is exactly that, that if you actually spend time, she spent 3 days, I think, reading the Epstein files, all you get is a bunch of guys not caring about women, or actually much worse than that, wanting to harm women.
Well, she even says the document redacts women and pictures of women in such a way that it makes them faceless. It almost emphasises the reality of what these women were to those men, which is interchangeable, faceless young women.
Loads of you get in touch. I do keep your thoughts coming at 0333 003 2353. Interesting point. A couple of people made this point, that Starmer's just Boris Johnson. You know, Boris Johnson was fired for a party. This is worse for Starmer. Is Starmer any better? I mean, Starmer basically was elected saying, I'm better than that lot. And a lot of what people are saying is, he's the same as that lot. And that, I think that's almost the most damaging political thing for him to deal with.
You can keep your thoughts coming in this morning. 0333 003 2353. It's 20 past six. Let's take a look at what else is happening online and in the papers this morning. On the front of the Times, a jury has acquitted six Palestine Action activists yesterday of mounting a raid on an Israel-based defence company's factory. More than £1 million worth of military equipment was destroyed during the raid, and a female police officer was left with a fractured spine. They were cleared of aggravated burglary over the break-in at Elbit Systems, but the jury failed to reach verdicts on other charges, including criminal damage, violent disorder and assault occasioning grievous bodily harm.
This is a great story. What music would you imagine might accompany a figure skating routine at the Winter Olympics in Milano Cortino? Perhaps something like this. But you would be entirely wrong. Well, not entirely wrong, because there's only one person not doing that sort of thing. One figure skater wants something a little bit more, well, contemporary. Do you recognise this?
Yes, Minions. What? I love the Minions.
You started singing along there, Kate. I did see it. The Spanish figure skater Tomás Lorenz Guarino Sabaté might be the only figure skater known for performing to music from the Minions film. Sabaté's fans were concerned this week that his plans would be thwarted by Universal Studios after it threatened to withhold the rights to their songs. But he's now said the noise on social media led to the company giving him their permission as a one-off for the Winter Olympics. So those like William Hague who say social media is the cause of all our ills, that's a pretty withering retort to him.
It's one for the Minions. In the Times, if you have pets, you probably love them as much as your family members, although you might not admit it publicly. But would you leave your cat a $1.5 million fortune? Well, the late fashion designer Karl Lagerfeld famously did just that for his beloved Burman cat Choupette. But this will is now being challenged. The challenge could open the door to Lagerfeld's nieces and nephews to potentially inherit a share of the fortune, despite the former Chanel designer leaving none of his massive amount of money to his biological family.
Should it be illegal to leave to leave money to a cat? I think it should.
No, I don't think so.
I think you'd have to leave it to your family, but if you're saying I'm leaving it to a cat, they should say leave it to a charity.
The question we have, though, this morning is Choupette. We looked this up. She's 14, I think. And in cat years, that's quite an old lady.
It is. Who's her?
So who's Choupette's beneficiary?
I think this is mad. But as soon as he said, I'm giving it to a cat, she said, you're not allowed to do that.
I think the name Choupette's lovely. It is.
It's a lovely name, and I'm pleased that you had a good relationship with this cat. You shouldn't leave it millions and millions of dollars. It's crazy. You might talk about this at the office. Water cooler.
There's so, what is the scuttlebutt? Anybody hear anything? Nothing? I got a little something-something.
I don't know if I should say.
So just keep it to yourself.
Stanley is having a midlife crisis.
Stanley is way past the middle of his life, especially considering his height-to-weight ratio.
Well, apparently, he and his wife were out dancing at a club for young people.
So you might think this is what people do in offices. They just stand around and gossip about cats and their colleagues. But apparently, people have stopped talking to one another in the office, according to an opinion poll. The average UK worker spends nearly 12 hours a week without conversation, according to the poll. Topping the list of loneliest jobs are farmers and van drivers, which is more understandable, that over a quarter of whom say they feel lonely at work. But if you're sitting in a busy office, maybe you never talk to anyone.
If you're sitting in a van this morning, or you're a farmer, send us a WhatsApp and we'll be your office water cooler.
Yeah, we'll talk back to you.
033 003 2353, although obviously not if you're driving a tractor or a van, literally right now, but, you know, when you have a break. After 7 o'clock this morning, the Community Secretary Steve Reid will join us. We'll hear about all the action from the Sunday Times Sportswoman of the Year Awards next. This is Times Radio Breakfast with Stig Abel and Kate McCann in association with Nationwide, a good way to bank.
The State of It USA is the new podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times that brings you real truth about US politics and power. Join political heavyweights Katie Balls and Gerard Baker as they take a deep dive into the latest wrangles in the White House and bring you intelligent analysis and insight. No fake news, no flag waving, and no Trump derangement syndrome.
Fascinating week in Trumpland, MAGA-land, what used to be called the United States of America.
Just the inside track on the decisions that are shaping America. The State of It USA is available now on the Times Radio app or from your preferred podcast provider.
I thought I'd seen it all, then felt myself awaken. I thought I'd witnessed beauty before my breath was taken. I thought that I'd known wonder, then sailed beneath these skies. I thought I'd seen the world until I opened my eyes. Change the way you see the world with HX Expeditions. Search Travel HX to discover more.
Listen to Times Radio on your DAB digital radio. Kate McCann and Stig Abel on Times Radio Breakfast with Nationwide, partnered with the Royal Marsden Cancer Charity to support pioneering research for people affected by cancer. To find out more, search Nationwide Fairer Futures.
It is 6:26. Good morning to you. This is Times Radio Breakfast with Kate McCann and Stig Abel. England rugby union star Ellie Kildon was named the Sunday Times Sportswoman of the Year at a special awards ceremony last night. Who would we send to that awards ceremony? Surely, surely not the person who has to get up earliest of anyone in the station. Yes, that's how Times Radio is structured, and yes, we did that. Rosie Wright. You went to the event, didn't you, my friend?
Or maybe they could have sent someone from TalkSport who might have had a more polished CV, maybe, over sport.
I know, though, Rosie, that when a big sporting event happens, if I had to think of someone who'll go there enthusiastically, maybe have a quiche-themed party to celebrate it, it would be you.
Absolutely. A watching party, probably with associated cakes, pavlovas, maybe in the shapes of flags, etc. Yeah, it was a night really about enthusiasm and celebrating some brilliant sporting success for women. You mentioned Ellie Kildon, who was named the Sunday Times Sportswoman of the Year. She is one of the Red Roses, if you're not familiar with that name. And so much about yesterday was actually, how do we increase name recognition of female sports stars? Her team, actually the England Red Roses, also were awarded the Team of the Year. It was brilliant to chat to them. Some of them kind of real grifters, kind of trained in London teams. And it's quite bold when you're kind of six or seven as a girl to realise, oh, I'm pretty good at rugby. Yeah. Actually, I'm going to kind of commit, not just as a hobby, but I'm going to make this my career. So it was really inspiring speaking
to them. And it's a dangerous sport. I mean, there's a lot of conversation now in men's rugby about whether you'd let your kids play rugby at all. And so that must be another bar, actually, I was thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm sure. And there was an awful lot, actually, talking yesterday about women's health and how that impacts the game and how there's not been as much research in that kind of field as there has been in the men's as well. But I want to introduce you to the woman who won the award for that sort of biggest inspiration, and she is quite remarkable. This is Sarah Perry, who is a part-time maths teacher. She is 34. I don't know how to describe her athletic prowess, because ultra marathon runner, trail runner does not do it justice. She earlier this year ran 400 miles in 95 hours. And what you have to do, she took part in a race that's called the Big Backyard Ultra. There is no finish line. There's no finish line. So it's the last man or woman standing. You have to run 4.2 miles in an hour, every hour, until you cannot run anymore.
And so once you hit the 4.2 miles, you stop.
You can rest.
You can stop.
Sleep, get changed, have some food, but then you've got to go again. And so she told me yesterday she would take honestly micro sleeps. Yeah, it might be 2 or 3 minutes. So you run, try and eat something, close your eyes for 2 or 3 minutes. She said she did manage to work out how to do that and then keep running. So she did 97 laps. She was the last woman standing. And in previous years, actually, she would have been the last person standing because she beat the male record. All at the same time, she's got a job teaching maths. She was quite incredible.
That's like a giant bleep test, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like the worst bleep. Could you have to do a bleep test at school? Imagine doing that over hundreds of miles. That's a 100 miles bleep test. It's the worst thing I've ever heard.
400 mile bleep test.
Unbelievable.
On no sleep. So she really was inspirational and a worthy winner.
I don't know how much they want to talk about this always, because often whenever you talk about women's sport, the third question is, why isn't it as big as men's sport? What are you doing to make it bigger? What is it? Is it the media? Is it the investment? Is it the fans? And in some ways, maybe that's a shame that that subject does come up. But it does come up, doesn't it?
It does. I asked the athletes yesterday how frustrating it is that so often they have to talk about, you know, oh, how does your game compare to the men's? And the last year we have had, the Lionesses won the Euros, that was momentous, and they won in 2022 as well, so it's real momentum with them. Then the Red Roses in the rugby ring the World Cup, so we do feel, I do think the last kind of 2 or 3 years there's been a change in momentum. But I asked someone who knows very much about what the public are genuinely interested in, Ben Taylor, the editor of the Sunday Times. Look, when he's writing the and choosing what's going to go inside the paper, is there genuine appetite from the public for women's sports stories as there is for men? And this is what he said.
First thing that I have to say is that the same rules apply for women as they do for men. It has to be good quality. So making sport professional has been absolutely crucial for football in particular, and I suspect we'll go the same way possibly in rugby. We've already got professional athletes, and you've seen the standards rising in athletics. You've seen the standards rising in football. We know about tennis. And I think it's the professionalisation of sport that has changed things. Why? Because it bluntly means that women have got more time to train, they've got more time to talk about, look at data, to think about endurance, think about diet, when you're not doing a part-time job as an amateur. And I think that's been the big game changer. How do you get to professionalisation? Well, you then have to get the people to watch it, either on television or in a stadium. And I think it's been difficult to get to the required level, so the TV companies are interested and also the spectators. But I think in a lot of sports, we're now at that point.
Yeah, that's the tipping point you were talking about. Rosie, great to speak to you. Thank you for staying with us.
Thank you both.
Go to bed.
Yeah, go to sleep.
That's Rosie there, who stayed up last night to bring us the tale of the Sunday Times Sportswoman of the Year. And of course, yesterday, Kate, we had a couple of old rugby players in the studio.
We did. They were great.
Big lads.
Well, one big one, not one kind of normal sized.
Yes. You enjoyed meeting them?
I really enjoyed talking about rugby, yeah.
Yes,
I didn't know a lot about the sport, so
what was
interesting
so funny is
that
these guys are in their 50s, old rugby players, and they were quite handsome, do you think? Even though Martin Johnson looks like a
knot. You were certainly starstruck by them.
Well, Martin Johnson, I grew up watching, and so I was starstruck with him.
It was actually quite sweet. You were quite giddy.
I was giddy. And also because you think, please don't be awful. Because
no,
I've,
they were
I've
lovely
liked you for
well.
So long, and they were quite nice as well. You enjoyed the size of their hands, I noticed.
Did you? Interesting. Jim says, good morning. I drive a van. I listen to you all day for company and it's great. Well, welcome, Jim, to the programme. Welcome to your water cooler, which is Times Radio's WhatsApp group. We're here for you all day long.
That's the thing we said yesterday. Was our WhatsApp group is like a giant family or
we
work.
We said that to
WhatsApp,
ourselves,
WhatsApp
didn't we?
Group. Yeah. So do keep that going, because we really mean that. It feels like we're all on the... Maybe this would be awful in your
you
estimation.
You feel like you're our family WhatsApp group. We feel like that.
This is our family WhatsApp group. 0333 00032353.
Just after seven, we'll speak to the Community Secretary, Steve Reid, and in a few moments, we'll bring you your daily briefing on politics, business and sport after the headlines with James Kitchen.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Thank you, Kate.
Good morning. Sir Keir Starmer's facing growing anger from MPs after admitting he appointed Peter Mandelson as Britain's ambassador to Washington, despite knowing about his links to Jeffrey Epstein. The Commons last night approved the release of documents relating to Lord Mandelson's appointment. The relevant paperwork will be referred to Parliament's Intelligence and Security Committee. The Shadow Justice Minister, Kieran Mullen, says the saga raises serious questions about the Prime Minister's judgment.
What the Prime Minister is seeking to do is to distract us all by what, of course,
course, very important revelations around potential misconduct in public office in relation to leaking sensitive information. But what we know for sure, and what we know the Prime Minister knew, was that when he appointed him, Mandelson had continued that relationship with Epstein.
Volodymyr Zelensky says an estimated 55,000 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed in battle since Russia's full-scale invasion in 2022. Trilateral talks featuring delegates from Kiev, Moscow and Washington will resume in Abu Dhabi later. Researchers say testing period blood for cervical cancer could prove an effective new screening method. A study found a sanitary pad topped with a sample strip may be just as accurate as current smear tests. And age-appropriate guidance on the justice system will be offered to child victims of crime in England and Wales. A proposed update to the Victims Code would see a clearer set of rights published for young people in the courts. For a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
This is Times Radio.
If you could sail anywhere in the world, where would you go? With Oceania Cruises, our small, luxurious ships allow us to dock in boutique ports in 600 stunning destinations. We offer a more immersive experience and a personalized service, creating unique travel memories. From the Caribbean to the Mediterranean and the finest cuisine at sea, it can only be Oceania Cruises. Visit OceaniaCruises.com or your travel agent.
Life is short. The world is big. See more of it with Wild Frontiers. Experience the soul of Georgia through traditional winemaking. Find your Zen on ancient pilgrimage routes in Japan. Or enjoy a thousand-star experience in a yurt camp on the Silk Road. Wild Frontiers' expertly crafted journeys take you further, so you can wander often, wonder always, and worry never. For small group tours and tailor-made adventures, visit wildfrontierstravel.com.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wix kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wix, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
Download the free Times Radio app and listen to us wherever you are. Kate McCann and Stig Abel on Times Radio Breakfast with Nationwide. Which banking brand of the year 2025?
Good morning. This is Times Radio Breakfast with Stig Abel and Kate McCann. It's 6:36. There's lots to come on the programme this morning. The Community Secretary, Steve Reid, there is. It's a huge programme today, actually. Steve Reid, the Community Secretary, also close ally of Morgan McSweeney, is with us at 7. We're going to hear from the SNP at 7:45 and Reform UK at 8:30 this morning. The Leader of the Opposition, Kemi Badenoch, will join us from 9. And from 9:30, we've got the Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, with us for a whole half hour answering your questions on transport. Keep sending those in, by the way. Lots of you have done so. We've still got room, 0333 003 2353, if you'd like to send yours. And good morning to Richard, who's a hedge layer. We were talking, Richard, in the break about what hedge laying entails. We were welcoming people to the programme who don't have a natural water cooler.
Yeah, and where you, if you listen to Times Radio at your work, please tell us where you work. Not, I don't give any firm names, but places where you work that you listen to Times Radio, I'd be really interested.
Or interesting jobs. I think hedge layer is a really interesting job.
And as I listen to Times Radio all day, if I'm planting hedges, I don't when I'm hedge laying. Even Stig's stentorian tones cannot carry over the roar of my chainsaw. So hedge laying is different to planting hedges. So that must be sort of hedge shaping.
Is it when you tie the hedge together so it bends back on itself?
Like
so
coppicing.
It goes in the right
is that
direction.
Coppicing? I want to call that coppicing.
I think coppicing is making trees a bit smaller, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. But I think we're entering an area where I have even less expertise.
We've walked into a forest which we do not understand.
Topiary. Does he do topiary as well? Do people still do that? Shape hedges to particular amusing shapes? Is that still a thing?
It is a thing. I think in some necks of the wood.
Yeah, it's only in sort of mansion houses.
Yes,
in
the country. So, yeah. Okay.
0333 235. If you listen to us at work, you can tell us where that is. Hugh Griffin will be here from 10, by the way. And Andrew Neil finishing his stint on the Time at 1 for this week. Always worth listening to. It is now 6:38. Time for our briefing on the day's politics, business and sport. Let's start with Stefan Boscher, shall we? What a day of politics it was yesterday. What a day it's going to be today. He's the Times Politics Newsletter Editor. Stefan, morning to you.
Morning.
So where do we end up yesterday? I think we've reflected already on this programme that this was an extraordinary day and it looks bad for Starmer. But where? How did it end? It started with this humble address and a question about what information could be disclosed. Where did we get to by the end of the day?
Well, I started badly for Starmer and it ended far worse. So, I mean, not only did he have to admit in the Commons that he knew that Jeffrey Epstein and Mandelson maintained a relationship after the 2008 conviction for child sex offences, which is something everyone, you know, assumed and knew because it was in the public domain. But that was a key moment in the Commons, having Starmer admit that. But, you know, it got even worse for him because the government has now lost complete control over the process in which the Mandelson vetting files are going to be released to the public. So it's now going to be Parliament's Intelligence and Security Committee, which will have a say, the final say, over what gets released into the public, which means that anything potentially embarrassing that, you know, isn't to do with national security but could be very politically embarrassing for Keir Starmer will now be in the public domain. And, you know, what I'm hearing from both the backbenchers but also from ministerial ranks is real anger and a real sense of futility right now. And there is a growing momentum to these things. We've seen it in the past in recent years, whether it's, when it's been on the Tory side of things. And there is a sort of sense of settling over Westminster now of a real inevitability about this scandal. And Starmer is in real trouble here, it seems.
Is that days, weeks or months is, I suppose, the question? Because these documents aren't going to be released immediately. There's the Gorton and Denton by-election, which is at the end of this month. There's the May by-election, which everyone, and local elections and regional elections, which everyone's been talking about. What's the time frame, as you see it, that he is in particular peril for?
Well, I think that the safest bet, if he gets unlodged, and I think that is, you know, I personally think that will happen, I think it will be after the May local elections, because I don't think any challenger would want to do it before then and then submit themselves to those, you know, what will probably be very terrible results for Labour. It looks like they're going to finish third in Wales, third in Scotland. London's looking really bad for them. So I don't think any, you know, new Prime Minister would want to come in and have that and own that as soon as they come in. So I think after May is still likely. But on the big caveat that, you know, between now and then, it's still a few months away, we could easily have another Black Swan event, a sort of, you know, a Chris Pincher moment, which did in Boris Johnson, any sort of scandal or, you know, unforeseen event, which just, you know, completely topples the government and Starmer is forced to go because, you know, he is that weakened now and his authority is so diminished that anything it does feel could push him over now if something, you know, comes down the track.
And that could be a Mandelson-related thing, couldn't it? Because this material could come out before May. Other information could become available. And I think I read somewhere someone said it would take two cabinet ministers to say, I can't carry on with this. If is that what it would take? Someone just said, a couple of people, significant people saying, this is no longer tenable. We're just, the project's over.
I think that's probably right. I think that's what we saw with Boris. You know, Rishi Sunak and Sajid Javid came out on the Tuesday night, and the Wednesday morning we had, you know, dozens of ministerial resignations. That's the sort of thing that it would take. And as you say, it always does come down to the cabinet in these situations. You know, historically, when prime ministers get dislodged, whether it's Thatcher, Boris, you know, Blair, who essentially was by Gordon Brown, even though he, you know, managed to do it on his own terms somewhat, it is when the cabinet turns against you when these things really start to move. And that is going to be, you know, what people like me and other people in the lobby are going to be looking for in the next days and weeks and months.
So let's throw another figure into that mix, and that's Angela Rayner, because she didn't have to stand up yesterday and say, actually, your plan to mark your own homework and decide what should be released and not be released is not acceptable, bearing in mind Mandelson's behaviour. She led the charge to get this the extra material scrutinised by the Security Committee, didn't she?
Yeah, this was an absolutely fascinating move, and I don't think anyone really expected it. And it was done in a way that was very understated, really. I mean, Angela Rayner stood up, you know, during this debate, and she, you know, asked to interrupt another person's speech, Alex Burghardt's speech, I believe. And this is, you know, done during parliamentary debates. People give way, speakers give way for other speakers to make short points of intervention. And, you know, no one was expecting Rayner to stand up and do this and essentially side with the Tories over her own prime minister, over her former boss. And, you know, after, you know, the context is important here. She's, for the last 6 weeks, been making a steady comeback. We've reported a lot on it. She's getting stronger and stronger, and now she comes out with this, rebelling against the government and, you know, really sticking a knife in the back of Starmer at a time when he is very weak. It does look like a blatant power play, either for herself or for someone else.
Yeah, and that's the movement we'll have to chart, and you'll be charting over the next days to come, and we'll see what effect it has. Stefan, really interesting stuff. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Steve.
Stefan Bosher there, and it's never a better time to be either reading The Times or reading Stefan's newsletter. He does it every day. If you are a subscriber, you get it as part of the package. Go to your Times account and click newsletters. Were you surprised when Rayner stood up like that?
I wonder whether you can look at what Rayner did in two ways. You can look at it as her, and it could be both at the same time. You can look at it as her realising that the government was on course for a really big problem in the Commons, and that this was the only way to get them out of what
almost
would have
been saving them.
Basically saving them from themselves, in the sense that she could recognise the strength of feeling on the back benches, and maybe that the government couldn't in number 10, and she could find a way around that. What that's done, though, is it's prompted lots of Labour MPs to suggest she is the only one with the political skills to really be able to detect when there's a problem in the party and steer it.